Hi there, folks, and welcome. Welcome back to NTI's Japan Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Ziv Nakajima McGinn, and this podcast is brought to you, among others, by Native Shark, which is an online platform for learning Japanese. And what Native Shark do is they make learning Japanese really, really simple. So you just show up, click a button that says study now, and the platform will then show you exactly what you need to learn next based on your progression. Now, this may sound simple, and in practice it is, but the way it's designed means that students who use Native Shark once a day for 4 to 5 months can complete the equivalent of over 2 years of university study. And what they're also unique in is that they teach all of the types of Japanese that you wouldn't normally get in traditional schools or textbooks. And if you've ever studied with one of the more common textbooks that foreigners usually pick up, you've probably noticed that there are a lot of sentences or conversations in there that you'd never really hear in real life, and vice versa. Some of the stuff you actually hear when you're out and about in Japan is never really covered in these traditional textbooks. So this isn't the case with Native Shark. It's very well grounded in everyday spoken Japanese, whether it's casual or formal language. And you can really expect, like one of the students writes in their reviews, you can really expect to be picking up the sort of little nuances that no one would expect a non-native speaker to use. And that's pretty rare for most Japanese courses. So yeah, really, really useful platform. And since you've heard about it here on the podcast, you also get an extra little bonus. If you sign up using the URL nativeshark.com/NTI, we'll link to it in this episode's show notes. That's native without an E, so N-A-T-I-V shark, all one word, .com/NTI. Use that link to sign up and you'll get a double length free trial. So 2 weeks free instead of the one. And you can sign up for that free trial without having to put any credit card or anything of the sort in there. So give it a go. You won't regret it. Okay, so for today's episode, this one is a short segment from one of our Wednesday Japan Real Estate Rooms on Clubhouse. And if for some reason you're still not aware of the platform, Clubhouse is basically an audio chat application. So plenty of audio chat rooms on various topics. We host one every Wednesday at 1:30 p.m. Japan time, and the experts hosting it are Emil Gorgis, a Tokyo real estate broker who specializes in Tokyo family homes, and perhaps more importantly, is also deeply knowledgeable on all things related to mortgages, property loans in Japan. We've also got Tracy Northcott, the Minpaku or short-term stay queen, and she knows all there is to know about maximizing profits from properties via short-term rentals, such as Airbnb and similar platforms. Yours truly, of course. And also we've got a recent new addition to the team, Matt Ketchum and his business partner, Parker Allen. And they are the Akiya and Inaka gurus. So all things related to Japan's abandoned or semi-abandoned properties, mainly in the countryside, but often even just outside or even in some of the suburban areas of some of the bigger cities in Japan. And this particular recording is a segment of a conversation during which we try to the best of our ability to answer a question that someone in the audience had about these types of properties. And Matt was just chiming in after we all did. And that was the first time we actually met him, or virtually met him, I should say. But he quickly became a regular part of the panel. And he and Parker's expertise as part of their business model at their company, Akiya and Inaka, has brought great value to many listeners and, of course, to many clients. So here it is, our thoughts on abandoned properties in Japan's countryside and also our very first meeting with Matt Ketchum of Akiya and Inaka. Enjoy, and I'll see you again on the other side.
So what's your opinion about those abandoned properties that just get auctioned off? Maybe not so many left in, you know, around the cities, but out in the countryside or reasonably close to the cities. What's your opinion of trying to grab those at an auction, trying to restore them?
So I have no experience with it, and none of my clients are sort of into it. It's not the business that I do, so I cannot speak to it whatsoever. But I do have a bit of an opinion overall on those old properties, which I'll go in a second. But Ziv and Tracy, do you have anything?
Yeah, I got a lot of opinions on them. The question is, In what format or in what aspect of them are you interested in? If you're looking into them as a place to have as your home away from home or a holiday home, or you might be looking to, you know, set up a countryside guest house, which Tracy can speak to, and that sort of thing. If you're happy to be hands-on with a place and live there or frequent it.
Yeah, exactly. It was more the first one to be, actually both of those scenarios that you mentioned, you know, both just have something, you know, no matter if I travel around the world or whatever, I know I have a home to come back to. And also as a project, you know, just something to do on the weekends, you know, I like to work with my hands. But also, yeah, as a potential source of revenue, pick up something for cheap, restore it, and then maybe, you know, lease it out to someone to set up, you know, like a restaurant or just as a like an Airbnb or something. But yeah, both of those scenarios.
Yeah, well, I'll let Tracy answer the Airbnb side of things or the short-term stay side of things. As an investment other than that, and even with that, they're not going to be profitable, unfortunately, at all, because unless the area is very popular and people are actually actively looking to set up business in that kind of place there, it's not going to really draw any tenants for leasing for business or for residence purposes. And if the area is popular, then they're not going to be that cheap anymore. On the downside of that, if the area is not popular, then whoever's got $50,000 to set up a restaurant can also buy one of these themselves. So there's really not much of a market there for long-term leases. And if you're looking at short-term leases, you need to closely look at whether you're going to be managing it yourself or if you're going to be in an area which might have management options for you, which again depends on the area. But I'll let Tracy speak to that.
Thanks, Zoom. Yeah, I think we all have a lot of opinions as well. I mean, look, it makes for great newspaper clicks to say free houses, you know, they're giving away properties. And but, you know, if you go in with your eyes open and you don't, and if you're not looking to see that this is a get-rich-quick scheme, that and you're looking at as, well, this is something that you want to tinker around with and you want to, you know, use your hands and build stuff with and keep your go in with your eyes open and some realistic expectations, I say go for it. Because, you know, that's a choice that you're going to make. You know, to think that you would make money off it is unlikely. I guess most of us who have come from Western countries have really been brought up with the mindset of, you know, property makes money. You know, you'll have the asset, it'll grow in value. That's not the case in Japan. There are other things at play here, but in terms of just having things go up in value year on year, because that's what happens, that's not the case here in Japan. It is a depreciable asset, which blew my head off when I actually got around to understanding that. It really was a surprise to me because it was always drummed into me from a very early age that, you know, property will, you know, you'll never lose value. But that's something that is not the case here in Japan. You think of it like a car. You buy it and expect to lose money as soon as you've got the keys. That said, though, there is some lifestyle. There is some lifestyle benefits to owning property. You can do what you like to it. You can, you know, be building with it. And then also, if it's something, is someplace that you like to go, and then possibly make it as a short term minpaku, that's totally possible as well. You would have to do your own marketing to get the demand up. When I look at short term rentals in my market, it's mostly inbound tourists. Obviously not right now, but usually it's an inbound tourist market play. And so and most first-time tourists are doing the golden route. So that's Tokyo, Kyoto, Osaka. And that's pretty much where they spend their 2 weeks. It's the second, third, fourth-time visitor that will get off the beaten track. It has to be, you know, you have to have something else to draw people there rather than just a pretty house. I'm not saying it's not possible. I'm just saying go in with your eyes open. That's me talking.
Awesome. Thank you. That makes perfect sense.
From my personal point of view, I actually looked at, there was some places in Niigata that were offering really cheap ski in, ski out apartments for, you know, I saw the real estate list. They were $1,000 for, you know, to get these properties. But the other thing you have to be careful of is have the taxes been paid or have the HOA fees been paid. If they haven't been paid and you buy something for $1,000, you still might have a couple of tens of thousands of dollars of back taxes or fees that are owing that you will have to, you know, that you'll own when you get the title to the property as well. So that's something else to consider when you look at these cheaper properties as well.
Plus, course, in particular, when you're talking about the ski resorts, a lot of them are on resort land. So when Tracy says HOA fees, aside from any old fees that might have not been paid, even if everything is paid, you're still going to be paying the resort itself anywhere from 100 to 300 or even more than that in some cases, dollars per month. And it comes with lots of benefits, but if you're only going to be using the place for 2 weeks a year or a month a year, it might be cheaper to just rent a place when you go up there. And those resort land properties cannot be leased short term to anyone. That's part of the resort rules. So that's something to look at. I'm not sure if ski was your thing, but that's something to look at specifically on that.
Okay, thank you.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Matt, we got Matt come up. How you doing, man?
Hey, good. It's not so much a question as a comment on what Rodrigo was just talking about. I deal in Akiya with a company I have called Akiya Inaka. Like you said, it's rather fraught with kind of uncertainty. There's a lot of due diligence that needs to be done. It's highly speculative. It's highly dependent on owners and municipalities and things like that, but just kind of chiming in and saying, it's totally doable. I do it. We just closed on some houses last week. So if you're interested, happy to talk.
Matt, could you let us know what you're doing with that space, actually? I'm very interested in that. What sort of, and how do you make money from them?
Right. So we function more as a real estate consultancy that's partnered with a actual real estate licensed real estate agent and judicial scrivener. Called STK Group, and the subsidiary STK Properties is our partner. But the way that we work is integrating with our clients to figure out, you know, what the hell is it that you are looking for? Because, you know, Japan's an entire country, and there's a whole bunch of different types of things out there. And when you start talking about, you know, living outside of, be it Tokyo, be it Yokohama, you know, basically the major metro areas, it's not something that a lot of people, you know, have kind of heavily thought about up until sort of COVID happened, right? And so there's a lot, like I said, there's a lot of uncertainty. And so the first thing that we have to do is kind of work with our clients to determine what it is they're actually looking for, you know, be that geography, be that, you know, how many stories, obviously budget factors into that. And all of these things. And so working with them and as a buyer's rep, essentially, we take them through the exploration process, kind of the kicking the tires process, introducing them to seller's reps, introducing them to the owners themselves, neighborhoods, things like that. And finally, if and when we determine, and that's also portfolio development and curation. And finally, when we do figure out which property it is that they are, you know, actually interested in buying, usually after about a month or two, of kind of research and, for lack of a better term, kind of hand-holding. Because, again, it is it's weird territory that does have its pitfalls, and so we need to be very careful about that. But finally, once we are able to determine, you know, whether or not there is a property out there that they do want to go with, we hand them off to our partner, take them through that entire process, which also, if required, you know, involves translation, things like that. And finally getting the keys into their hands, and then following that also with various upkeep services. Because, I mean, honestly, there are turnkey spots that we've sold on a Thursday, and our client moved in on that weekend, right? And then there are also very much fixer-upper spots that, you know, don't have the piping for the water and this, that, and there's, you know, rot and whatnot, but they are, you know, $1,000 or whatever. And so there is a very wide spectrum of people who are kind of interested in buying these properties, but they are buying.
So, there you go, folks. Matt Ketchum from Akia and Inaka, and he, along with the rest of our distinguished panel of experts, so maybe not that distinguished if I'm in it, but at least most of the panel is distinguished. And we're on, as mentioned, every Wednesday, 1:30 p.m. Japan Standard Time on Clubhouse. We'd love to have you with us. And if you still don't have a Clubhouse membership, don't be shy. Hit us up in the comment section or just email us on info@nippontradings.com. That's NIPPON. Tradings with an S, all one word, .com, and we'll hook you up with an invite. Really good conversations on Clubhouse and in our room, Q&A sessions, general Japan real estate banter, really fascinating stuff. So don't be shy, drop by and have a chat. We all love to talk shop. Now, before we go, we're also, as always, going to tell you and also link to our other sponsor's website. That's Hiroshi Shimizu, immigration lawyer and administrative scrivener. If you're thinking about moving here on a more permanent basis, or you are already in Japan on some sort of a more temporary visa and you want to switch to a longer term or permanent one, and also if you're considering setting up a local company or branch office of a foreign company, and you've got any sort of business or visa-related inquiry, or even if you just want to find out what your options are on any of these topics, feel free to contact Hiroshi Shimizu. You can find him at japanimmigrationexperts.com, and he can help you set up a company, apply for any kind of visa, or just provide you with the best advice and extremely affordable consultation related to these topics. And he's already done that for many of our listeners and our clients. So feel free to reach out to him. Again, that's japanimmigrationexperts.com, all one word, and you'll be well on your way. And that's it from us for today, folks. Hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Japan Real Estate Podcast. Do share it with your networks and please let us know what you think. So leave us a short rating, review on the iTunes Store, on Spotify, wherever you're tuning in from, or just drop us a line in the comments section or wherever you might have found this episode. We love hearing from you. Hope to have you with us again next time. And until then, have a great day or night ahead. Yoroshiku.